Z1077 welcomes you to Up Close, a weekly public affairs program presented by Z1077 News. You're invited to call in with your questions and comments. Our call-in number is 366-8471. Now, your host for Up Close, Gary Daigneault.
Well, thank you, mystery announcer, wherever you are. And welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show on this absolutely beautiful June 9th, 2023. Our producer is Michelle Alley. A number for you to call is 760-366-8471. And our guest in studio today shares Captain James Porter with the Community Service and Reentry Program. We'll talk about what that is. And Dr. Evan Thomas of Cal State University San Bernardino, who is with the FACE Program Director of Reentry Operations. I think I got the titles right. Did I get the titles right, guys?
All good.
Oh, yes, good. Absolutely. Okay. That's always a big thing for me anyway. Delightful to have you on. Now, we had you guys in, you said it was September of 21.
Yes.
My goodness gracious. And when this program was just starting to be implemented, and we're going to talk about what exactly the program is. And in the year and a half since, it has moved on great and sort of taken on a life of its own. So let me go back and start a little bit with you, Captain Porter. Community Service and Reentry Division, not normally what one would think of a law enforcement agency. What is the responsibility of this division?
Yeah, the Community Service and Reentry Division, or CSRD as we call it, was formed back in July of 2021 and then about to be Sheriff Dykus as we formed the division, had this vision that we from the law enforcement side needed to take a new look at how we do things like community reentry from incarceration and how we work with vulnerable and hard to serve populations like folks who are homeless and have substance use disorders and have mental health concerns. So because law enforcement in many cases is the first responder to all of those things, we took a really holistic look at it at trying to help people across the spectrum from incarceration to homelessness to all the other things we talked about, and took a less enforcement-minded look at it. Sometimes we say, and you'll probably hear me say it again, we live on this model of treat the offender, not the offense. Our goal is to look at people's individual circumstances, whatever those are, and then figure out the pieces of the puzzle to help them just kind of navigate their own way to success.
So people who are on the fringes for could be mental health reasons, being unhoused. So the whole idea of this is to keep them out of jail and out of the system. So you don't have those people being arrested over and over again on basically minor things, but still it becomes part of the system.
Yeah.
Am I getting that right?
I think that's that's a good summary. If you know, jail is part of their life sometimes, and we do want to try to intervene where they're there and help them get on a better path when they get out. And it's not to say that arrest is not ever an option. I mean, that's a reality that sometimes people do end up in jail. But where a better path exists and where we can better serve them for long-term success, that's our goal.
Now, when this program was first implemented back in August, you brought a young man here by the name of Evan Thomas from Cal State University San Bernardino, who's working with you. I'm very happy to see that young man is now Dr. Evan Thomas. Congratulations.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. And he's with the FACE Program Director of Reentry Operations. This is a pretty unique program where you have a law enforcement agency, the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, working with a program of Cal State University San Bernardino, but both for the same cause, is to cut down recidivism, to the
Correct.
Reentry division, who want people reentering the system.
Absolutely. No, so the Faith Through Care program, again, stands for Family Attachment Intervention Through Healing Solutions. And what we're really trying to do with that is blend together mental health professionals with law enforcement for this unified goal of reducing recidivism. Because we had already been working with the just involved population in the jail system for quite a few years before, but we wanted to expand those services to be outside in the community to expand the reentry services that we provided, because we want to look at criminal justice as a continuum. When they go from the point of arrest to the courts, incarceration, reentry, and anything else they might have in their life afterwards, they're all connected pieces. So working with the Community Service and Reentry Division under James Porter, a lot of things have just really started to click and come together.
So this isn't common in law enforcement agencies. I think San Bernardino County is kind of the setting the pace for this whole program. Is that correct?
Yeah, many of the things that we do are definitely out of the norm. And, you know, sometimes in government it's hard to hand over responsibilities to somebody else. And, you know, in our world, we count on the deputy sheriff to do so much work and to fill so many roles that maybe aren't really the traditional role of law enforcement. And we've had a lot of support from Sheriff Dykus and from our community and nonprofit and government partners to let the experts do what they are experts in. So Dr. Thomas, his partner Christopher Vallejo, and the Faith's team are social service providers, social workers, counselors, and we let them be the experts in their world and work with people on unresolved trauma and take best practices in those worlds and apply them to the criminal justice world. So there are very few places that are doing what we're doing, if any, and it's taken on so much that other places are emulating it, even though we're barely in the starting phases of getting this thing going.
Well, obviously it's a priority for San Bernardino County if Sheriff Dykus has charged a sheriff's captain with running a division for that. So obviously it's a high priority. One of the things I've talked to Sheriff Dykus and Captain Warwick and you about the last time you were on was the HOPE program. And I want to talk about that a little bit because that's kind of the basis for all the stuff after it. A few years ago, law enforcement nationally, not just locally, were being criticized because you had a deputy show up at a situation or a first responder at a situation where its mental health was the problem there, and yet they didn't feel law enforcement was properly trained to deal with those mental health crises. That has changed, and this is a big part of that change. Is that correct, Captain Porter?
Yeah, the HOPE program and this division as a whole is very much sort of treatment-driven. So HOPE's been around for almost 10 years, and you know they've been recognized nationally, and again, other agencies have emulated what they did, and they took a kind of the get-to-know-the-person approach to homelessness. You know, they work with these folks as people, not as homeless people, and their goal is to rebuild relationships and find the resources and get them housing and get them off the streets. And kind of the model they work is being deployed by the division, by Faiths and everybody else on a much grander scale with the research and evidence behind it to support that this is the right way to deal with some of these challenges.
And HOPE, by the way, stands for Homeless Outreach Proactive Enforcement. So
yes.
Let's talk a little bit about how your program works, okay? First of all, how do you identify someone who may be in need of one of the facets of this program? How do you find that person within the incarcerated population that you think needs a little help to stay out of there?
Are you speaking towards the HOPE team or under CSRD?
Under the vision, under the entire program.
So typically our clients are either court ordered to have some of our services during their incarceration period. But honestly, a lot of the word has just really traveled really fast about the programs we're providing. And there's been a lot of just volunteering sign up. But how we assess what sort of risk level they're at is using the Ohio Risk Assessment System, which is a risk needs assessment to see what sort of risk levels our clients are at. The majority of them are at the moderate risk level, and actually to really promote sustainability of using this assessment, myself and several other members of the Faith's team have been certified as lead trainers. So now we can certify anybody within the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department to utilize this assessment so that we're all on the same page.
Now, this is court ordered. Does that mean you have to work with judges and the court system so they get that information to you? Do you meet with the judges? How do they know about what you're offering?
So we actually do get court orders for people to participate in various programming, and then we have a liaison that handles communicating with the courts directly. So while neither I or Dr. Thomas have met with any judges that I'm aware of to discuss programs, we do coordinate with, say, the treatment courts who deal with a lot of the population that we work with, and with our superior court liaison to advocate for the placement of people into these programs. We also work with the public defender and with the district attorney to get their support to push people into programming. So, you know, I guess I should rewind a little bit and say when we talk about law enforcement and programs like this, I think sometimes people forget that there's a much bigger piece of sheriffing, so to speak, than the marked patrol car out on the street. The county sheriff is charged with running the county jail system. That is the primary responsibility of a sheriff. And currently in our county jail system, we have almost 5,000 incarcerated people, and many of those would have in the past gone to state prison, but because of changes in California law, they're now in the county jail system. And we need to have more robust, more meaningful programming that impacts those folks' lives when they get out, because most of them do get out and just come back to the same communities they got arrested in. And we're kind of failing them if we're not giving them the resources to be successful when they get out.
One of the things I've noticed about your program is when it first started, again, you were still feeling yourself up, but now you've become the primary outreach program for the county sheriff's department. And tell us a little bit about that outreach.
Outreach, like for the homeless, the mental health populations?
Right, yeah. I see you've got teams that deal with unhoused persons, undertreated mental illness, substance use disorders, and the teams deal with each one of those things.
Yeah, so we have teams both in the communities and in the jail system that work with your unhoused population, that work with people with substance use disorders, mental health. You know, oftentimes those things do go together. I think I'll guess at the number here. I think I'm about right. So our HOPE team does a lot of data collection, and they report almost 50% of the people they deal with have a serious mental health issue or a serious substance use disorder, and in addition to being homeless, they have these co-occurring disorders. You know, people are dying on the streets because of fentanyl and the substances that are out there. And so we're bringing everything. We have our teams include deputy sheriffs, public health nurses, Department of Aging and Adult Services, social services practitioners, behavioral health employees, probation officers. We've gathered up all of these resources that can touch each of those things that impact the population we work with, and try to find that right path that gets them to break away from that. And that's all we do all day long, outreach across the entire county.
Once you identify someone who's eligible for these programs, how do you implement the program? Let's talk about drug problems. It's an insidious problem. It's terrible. Nowadays with fentanyl, it's deadly. So once you identify someone as having a drug problem, and because of that, he's cycling in and out of the system, we don't want him in the system, what is your approach to that?
Right. So let's say that we had a client with a substance abuse issue in one of our trauma recovery and family relations courses. You know, I always like to see the criminal behavior, and I want to note again, it's the behavior, not the individual, is somewhat like a weed. Like the pinnacle of the weed would be the criminal behavior, the crime that occurred. The stem is typically the substance abuse, but the roots are some traumatic experience in their life that led them to the substance use in the first place. So in the trauma recovery and family relations course, we're trying to identify those criminogenic roots that led an individual down this path. Once they get going in our classes, we're going over all sorts of attachment theory and evidence-based practices. One of the things that we have for them is a relapse prevention plan. And so this goes over several factors of, okay, if you get to the point where you feel you're triggered, where you'd like to use again, who are some people that you can call that are healthy for you that are going to lead you away from
So
that?
Similar to a 12-step program.
Absolutely.
We have a sponsor.
Yes. We have a plan and almost a promise to themselves at the end of what is your defining reason, because I can't give you that reason for you. You have to have the desire, the intrinsic desire to want to live a different healthy life. And then once they're done with the class, because we unfortunately can't see them forever, they can take that relapse prevention plan with them. So they not only have support from us if they're willing to come back to programming, but let's say they never do, they have that that piece of relapse prevention plan in front of them at all times.
Would you call that rehabilitation? So is it a rehab program?
So not in the sense of for substance abuse specifically, uh-huh. It's rehabilitation in a general sense, because we're trying to rehabilitate them away from the criminal behavior.
And with people with drug problems, usually the criminal behavior is just a symptom of that, because the criminal behavior could be shoplifting or doing something to pay for the drugs, exactly. Which gets them over to law enforcement. Yeah.
So, well, I think one of the challenges you're touching on it right there is there's often this meshing of circumstance with crime, and you know, the homeless piece is the great example that folks who are homeless often do get arrested, and whether it's for trespassing or panhandling or theft or whatever the case is, those two things go together, and we've got to address the homelessness because the criminal behavior often comes with that. So our goal, our division goal, is not the crime piece. I mean, if they commit a crime, they're cops out there, deputies, police officers who can address that. It's not our goal. Our goal is to get to that underlying root that Dr. Thomas talks about. And then just to add to his piece there, you know, for the first time this year, the Sheriff's Department has hired a social worker that is assigned to me whose full-time job is reentry services. And she spends every day working with these really difficult clients, high utilizers, we call them, people who are getting arrested 40, 50 times a year.
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. And so she spends every day with them, working with their family, trying to rebuild family bonds, trying to connect them to resources, getting them their vital documents. Because if we don't do those things, then we're in a cycle that's never going to end. We have to break that cycle, and it's very taxing for her. It's more than a full-time job and a tough environment to do it in with a tough population.
So I may have started with the right subject when I say, how do you implement the program with a drug user? Really, I think the biggest challenge is the unhoused. If you're getting these people arrested 30, 40 times a year.
Yeah, well, I mean, every one of the populations we work with has its own challenge. You know, the unhoused population, one of the greatest challenges we face. And boy, if there's anything I could sit on your show and tell your listeners we need, it is the placement resources.
It's absolutely
the housing. Across the entire county of San Bernardino, there's only about 290 emergency shelter beds available on any given day, and we have over 4,000 unhoused people in this county. So those shelter beds are concentrated in Victorville and San Bernardino. So when you run across a person in Yucca Valley or in 29 Palms who's willing to accept help and wants to get into shelter services and get off the streets, first, one of those few beds has to be available, and they virtually never are. And then they have to be willing to transplant their life and go to San Bernardino. And I know people say, well, they're homeless, they can go anywhere. Most people are homeless in the communities they belong to, they lived in, and they're attached to, and they're not going to want to go to San Bernardino to be housed. It's a challenge.
Dr. Thomas, this may be something I direct to you. The root causes of homelessness, what are they?
Oh, there's so many. It could be different from any individual that you speak to.
So you have to be ready to offer a number of implementations depending on the root cause of them being unhoused.
Absolutely. And it really just starts with, and we do this in our classes, and I've definitely heard plenty of things about it happening with the HOPE team, is just building that rapport and understanding, you know, what's happened to you and having that trauma-informed approach of what is your life been so far that's led you to this environment. Because some people, it's just I couldn't afford to pay the bills. Some people, I got caught up in a drug addiction and this led me over here. Some people, I just want to live off the grid and not by the rules of society. But we can't assume what that root cause is unless we talk to them.
Well, how do you establish that relationship? I've volunteered twice for the point in time count, and they're not the unhoused people that I related to during that project aren't exactly going to invite you in for a cup of tea.
So just kind of speaking from our end, the theoretical framework that we use is interpersonal process theory. And what that really focuses on is something called the process dimension of really staying in the here and now between what's happening between myself and whoever I'm speaking with. If you're really genuinely in a moment with an individual, you're going to get to understand them over time. But so often we get caught up with so many other things going on in our life, or we kind of go on autopilot. We're not always listening to individuals. And especially with the homeless population, it's really easy to assume, oh, you're in this situation because of XYZ. But if you do get the opportunity to sit down and talk to them, maybe they don't want to talk to you today, you come back tomorrow or next week, over time, you're going to build that rapport.
And you've got to have a big staff to keep coming back.
It takes time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think one of the things that makes Faith such a cool program in the jail system, and then if I could touch on HOPE for 1 second, Faith uses college master's level interns, upper division interns, who have to get clinical practicum hours towards their degrees administering services. So with that relationship that we brought on board, the interns provide services that we could never afford because we get a staff of highly educated, capable interns who need the hours anyway to get their degrees, and they provide the resources to our justice-involved population. And then I want to answer your question about how do you build that rapport. So speaking from my HOPE team guys, my En-ROADS team guys who are out in the field, sometimes it takes some dozens and dozens of contacts to build a relationship where a person is willing to accept services. So Hope says as many as 70 contacts. And, you know, that's, once again, every day across the entire county, these guys are in the encampments, in the flood control channels, in the riverbeds, just building relationships, learning about people's families, the circumstances that brought them to homelessness. In their time of existence, almost 17,000 contacts they've made with homeless individuals to get about 3,000 into actual housing.
Now, we talked about implementation of the program, and we talked about with drug situation. So let's take an example. You identify an unhoused person who is being arrested all the time. How do we implement the program to help them stay out of the jail?
So I think that would be, let's say they got arrested for the fifth time. They come to one of our jail facilities. They're enrolled in one of our classes. So again, we'd want to focus on what is the root issue that's led you into this unhealthy style of living.
Now, do they have to want to take that class, or is it being required by the court?
Well, that kind of depends. If they're court ordered to be put in the class, then that's what it is. Sometimes they're not, and then we can sometimes go into the jail dorms and recruit individuals for special types of programming, or they'll volunteer through the jail kiosk.
And sorry, we do have a kind of this early intervention approach too. With, I mentioned the social worker who does reentry. So high utilizers are one of her specific population she works with, the people you're talking about that get arrested over and over. So when those folks get arrested, we get flagged. The computer system, the booking system, will tell us, hey, a high utilizer is in jail. And then Diana, our social worker, and her deputy partners will go to whatever jail that person's in and try to start that early intervention. And, you know, a lot of times they're going to get told to go away. The person doesn't want to talk to them. I have a little story they sent me about a guy that they worked with 60 times over the course of a year to finally get him to rebuild a relationship with his parents so that when he got out of jail, he would go home with them. And that's ultimately what happened. He went home with them. Now, in the time that followed, things fell apart and he went back to the streets. And you know, that's going to happen. We work with a really tough population, but it tells you that the amount of resources and people that we've got to be willing to commit to helping that one life turn around are massive.
To put a bit of a number on the resources to help an individual, so we have something also called transitional care plans, and it offers our clients over 55 different resource options of what they might need post-release.
I was just going to ask you, so you identify someone who is eligible for the program, who's being arrested over, and you said one guy was 60 times. What are the options for implementation? You say there's over 50 different options?
So, yeah, there's kind of a clinical element to what we do. Again, that's addressing the root, but there also has to be the case management element of it as well because, okay, let's say I'm healed. I'm really motivated to get out there and live a healthier life, but I have to go back to probation. I have a CFS case. Where am I going to live? I need a job, education. We need to provide them, being the experts in the field and having the expertise and connection they might not have, with those resources, they get connected from point A to point B. Because if we don't give them those resources, even if the desire's there, the tools aren't, and then the cycle continues.
What is the most common cause of homelessness? Is it drugs? Is it family? Is it relationship? Is it mental? Is there a most common cause? Or is it all the above?
I mean, let me answer in terms of maybe not cause, because I think the cause is a challenge because sometimes folks are homeless for years or decades. I think a common thread in homelessness is the substance use and mental health, and those go together with homelessness to such a degree that we can't overlook them. You know, I'm going to say I agree. We need housing. We need housing. We need housing. I'm going to say that all day long. We're never going to arrest our way out of homelessness. I will say that all day long. And we've got to address the mental health and the substance use problems because that is such a common thread that overlooking it is just irresponsible. So those, to me, are the big factors in people being or staying homeless.
And speaking from an anecdotal position, from what we see a lot with our clients, that they need some housing services upon release, it's really the support that they may or may not have. Sometimes some people would rather be homeless than go back to the toxic household that they might be in.
I was going to bring that up because I mentioned something earlier before we started about some people who are unhoused, it's a choice. It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And he gave me kind of a funny look. And I said, explain it to me on the air.
That's absolutely what it is. No, okay. Because we've had some clients, like, for example, one of the new programs that we've had is our custody to community track, which is a synthesizing of all of the program that we have. We work with them in a hybrid fashion of 6 weeks in custody and 6 weeks out in the community. One of the critical elements that we have to make all of that work is we bring in the family unit to start having a restorative conversation before the client gets out. Because let's say dad hypothetically is in jail, mom and the kids are outside, the offense happened. There needs to be a conversation about the lack of, maybe the offense was directly against the family. There is this emotional void that's happening, this financial void from the dad being in jail, whatever it might be. If you don't talk about this, they're trying to leave a healthier lifestyle. They're going back to a toxic environment. And maybe the family support's there and they would want to be there. Or maybe this is too detrimental to my mental health and is triggering me to want to use substances. I'm going to take my chances out on the street because I know if I go back to quote unquote home, it's just going to be toxic for me.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more of the Up Close Show. Our guest in studio today, Sheriff's Captain James Porter, the Community Service and Reentry Program Director for the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, and Dr. Evan Thomas from Cal State University San Bernardino Faith Program, Director of Reentry Operations. Our number is 760-366-8471. We'll be right back with more of the Up Close Show right after these brief messages.
Interest rates on hard money loans don't fluctuate with the Federal Reserve. This is Patty Brown, aka the Loan Lady or the Queen of Green. Do you need cash for home improvements? Trying to fix up your home to put on the market? We offer great alternatives and flexible lending for home improvement loans and mortgages. Our money to loan comes from local investors looking to invest in people, not credit scores. We've got money for your next project available and fast closing too. Call me today at 365-7003. The Loan Lady. We want to be your real estate lender.
The new Smokin' Triple Stack at Firehouse Subs. Stacked with honey ham, smoked turkey, and slow-smoked brisket, it's one of their meatiest subs ever. To top it off, a portion of every purchase helps provide life-saving equipment to first responders across the country. So at Firehouse Subs, they don't just make subs, they make subs that are big, bold, and craveable. They make their subs differently because their subs make a difference. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives. Home Depot Center, Yucca Valley.
Sue's Health Food, committed to your good health.
This is Cody Joseph from The Morning Show with Cody and Jeff. Sue's Health Foods is a regular stop for me. I can get staples there that I can't find at the grocery store. Everything from booch to nooch, as Jeff likes to say. Cashews in bulk, miso paste, local honey, and sweet treats for my kids. They really like the fruit chews from the bulk bins. The bulk bins are probably our favorite part of the store, and the employees are always so friendly and helpful. We couldn't make half the recipes we love without the ingredients we get from Sue's. My family has been shopping there for years, and the quality and care we have gotten has always been top-notch. I love going there, and I love supporting a local business that has given so much to our community for so many years.
Sue's Health Food, committed to your good.
And we are back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. Our guests in studio, Sheriff's Captain James Porter and Dr. Evan Thomas. And we're talking about the reentry operations of the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department. We're talking about how we identify those folks who need the program, what the program offers to them, and what the future may change. Now, we were talking about homeless, unhoused people. And is that the term unhoused? I've had some, you know, we've said homeless people. No, they're not homeless. They're unhoused. So.
I've heard the term unhoused individuals. Yes.
So I guess that's where we're going now to make sure that everybody is not put off.
Absolutely.
So, okay. You mentioned working with the family and getting the family involved. How do you do that? Or I know there's a lot of individual situations that are all different.
Right.
But if one of the ways we're going to get an unhoused person back into society and more importantly out of jail,
right,
how do you get their family involved with them?
So let's going back to the custody to community track, the specific program that I was talking about was the community assisted reentry effort or CARE, where you begin to again have these restorative conversations between the incarcerated client and the family system that might be on the outside to address any hesitation about their release. We continue those services with something called multifamily group therapy once they're out in the community phase of C2C, where that's, again, where we get to have therapeutic sessions between the incarcerated client or clients, depending on how many we have at the time, and family members about what are some issues coming up, what are some community-based solutions, what are things happening in your real life, and how can we address them. And just having this mediator that addresses these issues in the family unit, again, begin to heal, become healthier, and then the client is more desiring to want to go back to home.
Are the families in generally pretty supportive, or is it, we wrote this guy off years ago?
Roll the dice. Some of them absolutely like, hey, let's bring the family close together. We needed this conversation. And some, understandably, they've had similar conversations like this over and over and over again. Maybe there's just too much damage that's done. And we have to learn how to really adapt to wherever the client and their family might be at.
Now, your programs not just work with the unhoused population and not with just the drug-challenged population, but the entire gamut of society. What services do you offer in the jail that may help someone stop getting arrested? What do you offer? Is there art classes? Is there a book club? What is available to an inmate?
Yeah, so we offer a wide assortment of programs, as we call them. So we're always trying to impact kind of the three big factors in getting a person's life back on track: housing, employment, transportation. Without those things, it's really tough to be successful when you get out of custody. So, I guess I want to say, like, we got to first establish that the population we're working with is often not like you or I, or not like your listeners. Some of these folks have not gone to a day of school since they were in third grade. Some of them have been homeless on and off with their families their whole lives. Some of them grew up in an environment where crime and arrest were acceptable, normal behavior. So we got to focus on some of those things. So we've started doing a very detailed data collection of everybody interested in programming to find out what their needs are and then build the programs that address those. High school diploma is a big one. About 65% of our jail population has not completed high school. We just finished our graduation of our Five Keys as our partner. They're a charter school that does adult high school education in custody. We just finished our largest graduation ever, 22 graduates.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, and they get a whole graduation ceremony that their families get to come to. And in my world, it doesn't make a difference what their crime is. My people are there to help them regardless of their criminal background.
And, of course, getting that high school diploma is going to be an aid for them to get a job.
Yeah, absolutely.
A job means steady income. Steady income says they're not doing crimes to live.
Well, yep, and we've got vocational training programs and, a really unique partnership that we started last year. I'm lucky. I have a really forward-thinking program manager. Heather is her name, and Heather built a relationship with the Department of Motor Vehicles that allowed us to bring a mobile DMV office to one of our detention centers, and they screened, put together packages, and issued California licenses, California ID cards to incarcerated people right there on the spot at no cost, so that when they get out, they have a valid California ID in their property. We will help them get their birth certificates if they need those, because without those things, you get out and you can't get a job and you can't get housing. And, we say if you can't get a job, you can't get a house. If you don't have a house, you can't get a job because you got no address to put on it. If you don't have a job, you can't get a car, which means you can't get to work. And we are we're working at breaking each of those little pieces of that to help them straighten out.
So you identify the obstacles that person is facing and then try to eliminate the obstacles.
Yeah, we like to call them barriers.
Yes.
So barriers. And then we also have to remember that, like, in my division, like, this is not mass market products. We fight for one life. And if we fix that one life, that's a win. And then we repeat the process a little bit differently for the next life. It's a different approach at criminal justice. It's not a one-size-fits-all model by any means.
What's your success rate? How are we doing?
So the success rate for faith for successful completions is approximately 57%, and this is since launch. Now, there's a myriad of reasons for why a client might not be able to finish our program.
They 57% is pretty good.
It's good, but you know what? We're really shooting for the stars. We believe that we can help even more because people end up getting released. They get rehoused. There's so many reasons they might not be able to finish a class. A more kind of accurate measure would be with C2C, with in our
Tell us what C2C is.
Of course, okay. Custody community.
Okay.
I appreciate that. So with C2C, our completion rate is actually at 86%. This is clients actually finishing the full 12 weeks. But again, one of the things we're trying to do is expand our services to mandate clients continue until their actual out date. So to kind of put all this together.
Mandate through the courts?
No, for through the courts, through our programming, whatever it might be, because C2C is set for 12 weeks, but the actual out date when clients get their ankle monitor off may vary. It might be 2 weeks after the end of class. It might be 2 months.
Well, you graduate and get your ankle monitor off.
Yeah, well,
I guess whatever the incentive that works, that would work.
And I think that, you know, we have to also remember, we live in California and criminal justice here is not what it was 25 years ago, and community-based custody is a very popular
I'm going to ask you about that. How long have you been with the Sheriff's Department?
28 years.
Okay, and you have risen to the rank of captain. Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
When did your career kind of take a shift away from active law enforcement arresting bad guys to now coming up with ways to keep people who are struggling out of the criminal justice system? I mean, that's a big switch in the reason why one becomes a law enforcement officer or not.
Yeah, you know, it's a running joke in the office. I never thought in my career I'd be figuring out whether we could legally pay for a cake printer for our bakery, vocational program to print stuff on cakes. So I'm going to say probably about 10 years ago, I was a sergeant and I started to have a different look. It's not that I don't agree. I mean, I fully support the law enforcement approach where it's needed. And there's a lot of bad people in the world who jail is the right path for. But the longer you spend on the streets and the more you see we're not solving some of the quality of life, the nagging problems of society by arresting, repeating. And if we're not willing to take another look from our position, I mean, our goal is public safety, not arrest. That shouldn't be where criminal justice ends. Public safety should be the goal. And if there's a better approach to deal with these super low risk and moderate risk offenders, then we have an obligation to take that. So probably 10 years ago, I started looking, and then I was lucky enough to end up in this position and have a wonderful, wonderful team there. And we've just been building ever since I got there 3 years ago.
So how'd you end up in this position? Did the sheriff say, okay, Captain Porter, I think this is something you might want to do. Did you go to them? How did that transition happen? I'm not trying to get personal you, but it's fascinating to me watching the changes in law enforcement, which I think are good changes. I mean, you said it yourself. There's some bad people who belong in jail, but there's some people in jail who don't need to be there. And if we can stop that, then we're saving the county money, for one thing. I mean, people in jail are expensive to expensive to house, and you're solving a lot of petty crime problems. If that person who's got a drug problem is constantly shoplifting or burglarizing, you remove the shoplifter and burglarizing from the community, so that's keeping your community safer. So it's kind of a long game approach to law enforcement. So
it is.
How did you get identified as that guy?
I can't say how I got identified other than to say the same thing I say in community groups. So I don't feel weird saying this. Like, I've always been kind of the weird guy in the sheriff's department. I just don't have the same outlook on life as everybody else does. And I'm open-minded, and I'm willing to listen to folks like Dr. Thomas, to his team, to our drug and alcohol counselors, to our teachers, who say, like, we want to try a new way. And the reason I think that's so important, I think that's the reason I ended up there, because I tend to be very open-minded and I want to try new approaches. And so here's why I think it's important. You know, going back to custody to community, I'm going to give you a super snapshot of custody to community. People are in custody. They go through a screening by the faith's team. If they meet the criteria, they go through 6 weeks of psychotherapeutic programming in custody. They get an ankle monitor attached, and they get released from jail to serve the rest of their term in community-based custody, house arrest, with continued treatment by the Faith's team. So about 25 people completed that program in the last year. It's a very intensive program. So out of those 25 people who completed it, 17 of them, maybe 18 of them, are 100% free from arrest. One of those, the first batch is now 2 years in, free from arrest. That's amazing, because some of these folks were getting arrested 5-8 times a year. Some of these people have been arrested 50 times in their life. And now some of them have been out for 2 years and have been arrested 0 times. And 17 or 18 out of 25 is a huge, huge success for us. So that's why it matters that we take new looks at things, because sometimes we can do better.
Dr. Thomas, what about you? How did you get involved in this program from day one?
I got involved. So I started actually as a student intern when we used to be parental intervention project.
And you were at Cal State University, San Bernardino?
I'm actually a California Baptist University alumni.
Okay. Are you Cali boy? Are you local?
I got a Lance up. Yeah, I'm Cali guy. SoCal. Right. I started with parental intervention project. And one thing that's really been passionate of to me is changing systems, because something I always say is, you know, you can teach someone how to swim, but it's not going to matter if they live in an environment without any water. So as we're trying to give all these clinical interventions to the clients we serve, I'm also trying to adjust the system so that they can match the growth that the clients have. Because as Captain Porter was just mentioning, for example, with our C2C clients, you know, they get out there, they have the support, they have the education and the resources, and now all of a sudden the rates are going down.
How many students and staff are involved in the FAITH program?
Right now we have 10 paid staff members. Our interns, we just had 18 finish. So far since launch, we've actually helped 37 graduate level interns achieve their master's degree in behavioral sciences through our practicum site. We also have a few child development interns from Cal State San Bernardino and some research assistants as well. But we're looking to expand those services. One thing that's kind of around the corner for us is getting some diversionary programming going and really kind of amplifying the services that we have at our community location in San Bernardino, and we're going to need assistance to do that, so we're looking to grow our staff.
Now, Captain Porter mentioned that when someone goes in custody, the FACE program does the input to identify whether that's a person who's appropriate for the program or not. I'm adding words to your answer. How do you interface with law enforcement? How does that work? You've got the civilian world and you've got the law enforcement world. But both are working for the same goal, which is to stop people who are being habitually arrested from being arrested anymore. How do you do that?
I would say one of the common places, again, to keep bringing it up, custody to community,
yep,
is when they
That's
get
C2C.
Yeah. When they get to the ankle monitoring period. So we work with them for the 6 weeks. On the last week, they get their ankle monitor from the Sheriff's Department's work release. And so while they're working with us in the classes, they're still under monitor from the work release program. And we have to be in communication with each other about, okay, this is where a client's supposed to be. We need to expand the amount of hours that they can be out because they have a class with us. They're going to a job interview, whatever it might be. Because if they're outside of those parameters that the Sheriff's Department and FAITH are agreeing on, then something's wrong. The client's kind of going outside of their means.
So law enforcement working with the civilian community can actually get more done working together than either of them could do by themselves.
Who would have thought?
Well, and I think that's across the board, whether it's our outreach teams or my social workers who work in the jail system. Who, I mean, I can never say enough about the social workers and drug and alcohol counselors who work in the jails. Again, that's a full-time job to deal with that population. But I think what you start seeing is where sometimes we had some reluctance from some of the safety personnel to let, you know, our programs come into the jail, because it's not traditionally what you see. But as they start seeing positive results, better behavior, less problems from the incarcerated folks, we start getting support. And as our younger folks come into the jail, younger deputies and stuff, they're a little more in tune with this side of
so
the world.
So a little pushback until they start to see results, and now it's, oh, maybe this is working.
Yeah, and I don't know that pushback is the right word. I mean, I think the jail's a very tough place to work. I mean, and the people there, some of them are just not good people. And it can be taxing on you, physically, mentally, to be an employee there.
Yeah.
So when we bring in new programs, you know, sometimes there is a little resistance to them, and it's never like, no, we're not supporting this. I just think they like to see that we're actually producing some tangible results, which we are, and then you get more support.
We're going to talk more about those programs. We're going to take a quick little break. We'll be right back with more of the Z1077 Up Close Show. Don't go away.
Seeking a church to call home? You're invited to connect at The Ship, Gospel Fellowship Christian Center Church in 29 Palms, envisioning a church where people are connecting with God, growing together, and serving the world. Services are Sundays at 9:30 a.m. or Wednesdays at 7 p.m. on the website. You can also listen to Z1077 FM on Sundays at 7:30 a.m. as Gospel Fellowship broadcasts a portion of their services. Visit gfccc.org for a complete schedule of weekly programs.
You could throw your flip-flop at a bug.
Ew, a bug, get it!
But the chances of actually hitting it...
Oh, over there!
...are statistically...
It's still alive.
Unlikely. Good thing nature's got your back. Stem bug killers combine powerful active ingredients found in plants, like lemongrass and geraniol, and scientifically engineer them into effective bug-fighting formulas, safe for use as directed around people, pets, and throughout the home. Stem. Rooted in nature, optimized by science.
My ride smells just right, just right, just right, just right.
Y'all gotta try that Febreze car.
Just right, just right, just right, just right. La 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 la. With up to 40 days of consistent scent, all over Febreze car clips right on your vent. You know my car's my happy place. Keep that smile on my face. When it smells just right, just right, just right. Breathe happy Febreze. La 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 la.
Community pharmacies do still exist. The biggest advantage they have is the ability to give you more personal attention. The staff at Star Pharmacy get to know their customers. It's easier to ask questions when you know your pharmacist. Star Pharmacy also carries durable medical equipment, wheelchairs, walkers, and other health aids. A full range of supplements to boost your immune system, even meds for your pet. Visit your local Star Pharmacy across from the post office in Joshua Tree.
And we're back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. Our guest in studio today, Captain James Porter with the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department, and Dr. Evan Thomas from Cal State University San Bernardino FACE program. One of the things we talked about was family involvement in the program, and that would be children's involvement too. If you have someone who you identify as someone who would benefit from them, but they have kids. How are the kids affected by their parents being in jail?
Well, the fact is that the parent is in jail. They're not there. So this is an attachment that is wounded. And that's one of the huge reasons why we provide this program, because it's not just about the parent client that we see in the jail.
Attachment wounded. That's a fascinating concept.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because mom, dad, whoever your caregivers are when you come into the world, that sets the blueprint of how you're going to interact with people and see the world. And so if dad's with you and mom's in jail, this is a missing critical figure in your life.
So do you work with those kids? Is there a program for the kids of the incarcerated?
Yeah, we actually have several. We have some really unique programs that no one else is doing that we're aware of. And I'll touch on one and let Dr. Thomas touch on one. So we have one called Love for Literacy, which is a new partnership with Ted Alejandre, the superintendent of county schools, and his office. And Love for Literacy brings children into a daycare center, basically, that we've built on the edge of the jail property. And under supervision of deputies, teachers, and social workers, the children and their incarcerated parent get in contact, real life human visitation. So they read books together. They play on tablet computers together. They get to play a piano that the school donated to us together. I'm quite a piano advocate myself. And it builds child literacy. It builds adult literacy. And it helps rebuild that bond between the parent and the child. So then we have other programs like Talk that I'll let Dr. Thomas talk about. that do that on a much larger scale. Because ultimately, remember these folks, yes, we say inmates, incarcerated persons, but they're human beings first, and our job is to help them be successful when they get out.
Now, those human beings who are incarcerated, who may be pregnant, I understand there's a special program that you have dealing with those inmates.
Absolutely. Just kind of rounding out what Captain Porter was mentioning. So our talk program, we've been running that for a while, even since our parental intervention project days, and that was the supervised visitation between the parent and child, where they get to reestablish that attachment that may have been wounded from them being in jail. But now one of the newer programs that we've had is our pregnancy support group. And this is a group for incarcerated individuals experiencing pregnancy, whether that be postpartum or prenatal, because the process of pregnancy can already be daunting enough alone, but amplified in jail where your child's going to get separated from you. We wanted to provide them some support with that. And I really got to give a shout out, I mean, really to the entire Faith's team, but there were a couple interns that went above and beyond to develop this. So in partnership with Maternal Health Network, synthesizing our own program, and then these interns doing their own research, we really created this awesome 12-week curriculum.
I got to pay a little bit more rent. We'll be back with the final portion of the Z107.7 Up Close Show in just a few moments. Don't go away.
At Morongo Basin Community Health Center, your health is our priority. That's why we have medical specialists, including chiropractic, behavioral health, and now dermatology, available right here in our convenient Yucca Valley and 29 Palms clinics. Make an appointment today. Call 760-365-9305 or log on to our new website, morongobasinhealth.org. Morongo Basin Community Health Center, a program of Morongo Basin Healthcare District.
Because you live in this beautiful desert paradise, you can eat a delicious lunch for just $10 at Sky High Pie in Joshua Tree. Every day they show their local love with a big selection of $10 entrees, any of their three basic pies, a caprese salad, house-made minestrone soup with a salad, a stuffed portobello mushroom, Chef Bear's flaky quiche with a salad, even their meatballs. Just $10 Monday through Friday, 11 to 3, dine-in only. Sky High Pie, locally owned and operated by Lifetime Locals on the highway downtown Joshua Tree.
Before you hit the road this summer, hit up your local Big O Tires first. We'll get your vehicle road ready. With four new tires installed, just $400. You heard right. Four new tires for your ride, as low as $400, including installation. Plus, pay zero interest for 12 or 6 months on qualifying purchases. Summer's here, and so are the savings. It's our biggest deal ever. Four tires installed, now just $400. For a limited time, for your nearest store, visit BigOTires.com.
And we are back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show. If I have a family member that is incarcerated and I would like to find out what is available for them, maybe to help them from being incarcerated again, how would I get information and how would I get a referral?
So the Community Service and Reentry Division has links to all of our services on the San Bernardino County Sheriff's Department website. You can go on there and get contact information, or you can simply send an email to inmateservices@sbcsd.org, and we will take it from there and get them connected to whatever they need that we offer.
So, Dr. Thomas, you've got your program fully functioning. You've got interns working for you. What's next for you? Are you just kind of gathering what you've done? Are you planning on moving on? Do you want to do more? What's it up for Faith?
Well, I wish there was there's one specific program. I can't share the specific details yet, but we are actually accepted into a national program, and there's going to be more opportunities.
So you are moving up.
There's more opportunities for individuals to come and work with us. Uh-huh. and kind of swap some experiences. But one real thing we're trying to do is open up our referral system. And like Captain Porter mentioned, you can find our info on the website or email us at faiththroughcareprogram@gmail.com. So we're starting to recruit potential clients out in the community that are associated with this population, provide them psychoeducation, counseling, and case management.
And all that contact information is available on the sheriff's website.
Yeah. And Dr. Thomas plays down this national recognition. I know he can't talk a lot about it, but I'm going to tell you that the partnership here, the Faith's program, was one of less than 10 organizations across the entire country selected to participate in this program.
Captain Porter, Dr. Thomas, thank you so much for coming in. Maybe we won't wait a year and a half before we have you come back, because I think there's some great, valuable information.
Thank you so much.
That's going to do it for this week. I'll be back next week with more of the Up Close Show. Until then, thanks for listening. Drive carefully, and God bless. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Up Close, a weekly talk and interview program presented in the public interest by Z1077 News. Join Gary Denyeau again next Friday at 10 for more Up Close.